Welcome to ArtSpeak Radio Digest on CFRO 100.5 FM on Vancouver Co-op Radio. This is the Proximities Edition. My name is Bopa Chai. I'm the Director Curator of ArtSpeak and Artist Run Center. I am here in the office with my colleague Eric Hood, who is the Associate Director at ArtSpeak. You are just listening to Bury Your Cowslip by Sydney Hermont, a new song with flute, guitar, and voice. It was recorded and mixed by Sydney over the course of a week in late May, early June this year. Sydney's album is due out this summer. Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge that we live and work on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. Both ArtSpeak and Co-op Radio are located in the downtown east side in Gastown. In this moment, in this time of increased online and remote programming, it's important to remember the local communities that make our work possible and to ground our discussions and our commitments. Tonight's episode is the final episode of ArtSpeak Radio Digest. We'll be featuring Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed's Bubble broadcast with David Balula. We're also happy to have writer and poet Samantha Nock, as well as Caitlin Purcell on tonight's show. You can also listen to past episodes via our website that has featured the brilliance of Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed as artists in residence of the show with Bubble Broadcast, Raven Chacon, Charmaine Lee, Melissa Edwards, Stephanie Ling, Sydney Hermont, Christina Battle, Stephen Hubert, and Dashes with Barbara Lazaro. So first up tonight, we are very excited to host writer and poet Samantha Nock, who will be speaking with Lindsay McKinnon about kinship. Next, we're happy to host Caitlin Purcell reading a poem that was a commissioned response to Ublek Tikiyuak, an exhibition by Kabusiak at ArtSpeak that was initially scheduled to open on March 13th. We look forward to reopening in September with Kabusiak's show and look forward to seeing you then. Wishing you all a good, restful, healthy, and peaceful summer. Thank you for joining us over the past several weeks. We'll leave you with Caitlin reading Metamorphic Black Rabbits Unravel.
Tansi Kakyo, my name is Sam Nock. I'm an Apatawga Sans Gwayu Cree Métis woman who grew up in Treaty 8 territory in Northeast BC in the Peace Region, but my family originally comes from Alacross or Sagittawuk in Northern Saskatchewan. I am a writer, I am a poet, a podcast host, and a beater. I host a podcast called Heavy Content, which explores the representation of fat people in the media. Unfortunately, I'm currently on hiatus, but because I love to be predictable in the core, I am rebooting my podcast, and I'm hoping to have it launched by the end of August. So that's exciting. I want to thank ArtSpeak for inviting me to be a part of the radio show, and it's been truly fun to record and play with audio again after taking some time off, and it's really sparked my want to start my podcast again, so I'm very thankful. But before I really get into what this episode's about and what I'm talking about, I want to acknowledge that everything was recorded on the unceded ancestral territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I have been an uninvited visitor here for about the last 10 years. It'll be 10 years at the end of August. And I take what it means for me to be a visitor in someone else's home very, very seriously. And I am deeply humbled and want to show immense gratitude that I get to walk on these lands every day and live my life on these lands. And I don't take land acknowledgements lightly. And I truly try to position myself in the complacency and the work I have to do while being a visitor here. And I, like I said, I am truly grateful and I am truly humbled by that work. And it's work that I want to do and work that I love to do. I just want to show up and be a good kin where I can. And that really ties into what this episode is about. When I was asked to do this show, I had a million ideas of what I wanted to talk about, and at first I was like, all right, I want to talk about connection during COVID, and I was like, you know what, I actually don't want to talk about the pandemic. We're all living through this shared trauma, and I honestly think we're so inundated with information about the Roni that, like, we don't need another person talking about it, so I struck that off. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll talk about embodying fatness. Because that's something that's very personal to my life as a fat Indigenous woman. And I was like, ugh, maybe I don't want to talk about that. I already talk about that on my own podcast and in a lot of my writing. I think I want to talk about something else. And something that I've been really working through and writing a lot about right now is kinship. And as a Cree Métis person, I have a sacred duty to kinship. Kinship to my people and other people, the land, animals, the spirits, and ancestral world. And a lot of that is embodied in my way of being. And working through this, really, these relationships and working on them and my duty to them has been very healing to me and my relationship with myself and also my relationship with all of these other things. And I was like, oh, I want to talk about this. And I want to talk about the complexities of exploring and receiving teachings about this duty on someone else's land, and how do I enact this very prairie thing while not being in the prairies, while being on the coast, not being on my lands, being displaced from my lands, and how do I do this? How do you navigate this? And I sat down with my kin, my cousin, Lindsay McKinnon, who is a very, very cool person. I don't know how to describe them. You're going to see in the interview where we just kind of laugh around having to talk about each other. But Lindsay is a community organizer, a beater, this really amazing person that does such good work, especially for trans and two-spirit BIPOC youth. And who is literally my kin. And so I wanted to sit down with them and I wanted to talk about what kinship means to them, what kinship means to us, and how we have navigated that on these lands, because we're both displaced from the north. And it was this really wonderful conversation that I'm really excited to share with you. There are a couple notes I want to make. First of all, these are our opinions. Obviously, we can only speak for ourselves. We don't speak for all Cree Métis people. I don't speak for all Cree Métis people. I don't speak for Lindsay. Lindsay doesn't speak for me. And yeah, I just want to say that. I also want to just talk a little bit about my methodology, about the recording process and the editing process. And so when I recorded the conversation I didn't want it to be like we each had our own mic and I was the interviewer and Lindsay was my subject. And I really wanted to emulate what it means to have a conversation and how important the act of visiting is for Métis people and what that means. And the act of visiting around a kitchen table, around your cook-ums table, is where we had all our conversations about governance, about who we are and how we be. And I wanted to bring that into this conversational process, and it is a methodology that I want to bring into all my interviews I do for my podcast and also how I conduct myself with other people. And I just wanted a very organic conversation. And how I did that is Lindsay and I shared, I have one microphone, I have a little USB mic, and I put it on their coffee table between us, and we just sat across from each other and had a conversation, which leads into the way I edited the audio. When you hear it, you're going to hear a lot of laughter. And I recorded over an hour of audio, and I had to edit it down into at least 20 minutes. And it was hard. I took out a lot of really good content, but I kept in a lot of our laughs because laughter in the prairies for Korean Métis people is magic. And our loud cackles are just ways to call us home. And I didn't want to take that out. And I know a lot of people get annoyed about banter and laughter and all this stuff in podcasts. But honestly, if you can't sit through 20 minutes of two indigenous people laughing, I don't know what to tell you. I think you need to reevaluate your life. Yeah, and there's also a lot of background noises and references to Lindsay's cat, Fred. And I wanted to keep all these things in because I know it's a little, like a bit of a faux pas in audio production to keep in background noises, but I love the way it makes the conversation feel more grounded and organic and real. And I really dislike that real the artifice behind recording. And it sounds so stale and hollow, and it just sounds like the people aren't in the real world. And so I wanted to keep these things in. And so I did. But yeah, I'm so excited to share this with you. Lindsay and I talking about kinship, and I hope you enjoy. So thank you.
All right. So who are you? Tell me about yourself. What's your name? I don't know.
Oh, God, Sam.
It feels weird to ask you who you are.
Really weird. Okay. Can it be a short one?
It can be as long or short as you want.
Okay, cool. So this is what I would have said to you had we met under code-switching circumstances.
Okay.
We're going to do this podcast thing. I just hate talking about myself, but I talk about myself a lot.
I was going to say.
All right.
Okay.
I got this.
Okay.
Tanse Sam. My name is Lindsay.
Sounds like you're interviewing for APTN.
No. I am interviewing for APTN, looking for a new job. Dance. My name is Lindsay McKinnon. Sorry, okay. Maybe I just need to not look at the mic. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, Dance, everyone. My name's Lindsay McKinnon. I am Cree Métis, and I grew up out in Treaty 8 territory, just north of the Peace River. I moved out to Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples 11 years ago and have been living on this land for the past 11 years.
All right. What do you do?
Oh, I have to talk about my job.
We have to talk about your job. Oh. It's like a little like, what do you do in Vancouver?
What do I do? I've been working in community through community organizing as well as advocacy work for Indigenous youth specifically. Queer, trans, and two-spirit, Black, Indigenous, and POC youth. I feel like, yeah, it's hard to talk about what I do.
I do a lot of work talking through kinship as well as reframing trauma as resiliency and looking at a person's coping mechanisms as something that they've done to resist and show love and care for themselves. So that's something that I practice through my bead work as well as in my relational approaches to community work as well.
Cool. Thank you. And that's what I want to just have a conversation about informally. Just
to be clear, it's informal.
It is informal. just about what it means to try and uphold kinship and be separate from our territory, and what that means to be from the prairies and living on the coast, trying to uphold as much prairiness as we can while still being respectful here. And what does proximity mean? Because we don't have proximity to our homes, but we have proximity to each other and a community. And yeah, I'm not saying you have to answer that all right now.
Is there a question?
No, I'm just telling you what we're talking okay, about.
Got it.
But I think it's good to tell people how we know each other and what our connection is. Mm-hmm. So we met 6 years ago?
6 years ago.
6 years ago. Okay.
I was 24.
You're 24? Oh my God. Were we ever 24? That's horrifying.
I know.
That's absolutely horrifying. So we met 6 years ago. Were we introduced? Who introduced us? Did that happen?
No one introduced us, but for like a year, every white person wanted to introduce us because we were the only Native that they knew.
That's true. And then we spent some time hanging out, and we may or may not remember it. That's fine.
I do recall that we tried to start a wholesome book club together because that's like who we were trying to be at that moment, but not who we were.
How just on brand for your early 20s to be like partying but being like, don't we want to start a book club?
Yeah. Have you read about the undertones of this wine we can't afford?
This PBR has a nice oak flavor. So we met 6 years ago. We didn't know we're cousins then, though.
No.
No. How do we find that out?
Well, I think we started hanging out with other people, and then you were talking about being a Morin and the Lafleurs, which is my family. And then I think it was like a year later, less, I don't know. You said something and it reminded me of a family member, and I told my cook'em, I called my cook'em and told her about you. And she said, I'll call you right back. And she went through our family tree and called back to say like how we were connected. And then it's just been like a steady downstream for like the past 5 years of us finding other ways that we're related as well.
It's true. So truly found a cousin on the coast I didn't know I had. That's funny. That is so funny. Yeah. I guess it's funny how kinship finds you. Because mm-hmm. at that time, I really wasn't thinking about any of this. I was truly just a mess.
Yeah. I was dating white people, so.
I'm still dating white people.
We live, we learn.
Okay. I came here for a good time. Not to be called out. Love you. Made it this out.
Oh yeah, sorry man, I didn't mean it.
Vice cousin to interview ruins relationship.
Sorry. Drags you. Sorry. We're here to talk about kinship, and if you'll excuse me, that's a very prairie form of kinship.
It's true that prairie accountability is just absolutely dangling you over the ledge. Okay, cool. What does kinship mean to you?
Wow. Kinship. Yeah, I guess like for me, kinship, when I used to think about it, was just thinking through my relationships to family members and community from home, and yeah, like the animals and the parts of my territory that I had connection to. And also Maggie, my oldest friend, was kinship, I think. Yeah, and as I've grown and started to build community here, that's changed a bit, in that while my family and territory are my kin, that kinship has been a space of, yeah, creating close familial ties and building relationships of reciprocity. And by reciprocity, that's a really nice word to say, like, people who will really call me on my shit. And really, yeah, having like those close relationships that it doesn't feel like you're performing, and yeah, that you can show up as your full self in. And yeah, that there's a, I don't know, the equal balance of caretaking and laughter, and that there's not an expectation that we perform in a particular way. Or code switch, as some might ask me to do sometimes.
I didn't ask you to code switch.
I recall this differently. And that is kinship. I will call Samantha. I'm just kidding. Kinship, yeah. Kinship for me, too, is thinking about not even just, like, the relationships that I've built on this territory, but also... yeah, the relationship that I've built as someone who's an uninvited visitor and someone who's building relationships and, like, always in relation with folks from host nations as well as this land, and finding the ways to, yeah, practice protocol and honor that space and to not take things for granted and to show up in, yeah, support and using your voice to support folks whose territory that you're on as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because kinship, and how I understand it, is so tied to people, but it's also so tied to land. And it's really interesting to navigate being displaced from your home and living in someone else's home and then trying to practice your own ways of being while still being respectful. It's just like balancing a million spinning plates. Mm-hmm. And I think, but yeah, it's just complicated. And I think that it just comes back to having to learn how to conduct yourself on someone else's land because you aren't in close proximity to your people and to your elders. And I think there's so many lessons we get from land and community. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting what people sometimes view lessons as. Mm. And it makes it sound like there's this great sacred teaching that just comes down to you. But, I mean, there's so many lessons we can learn from the land. Like, even the act of berry picking is a lesson of, like, learning to say thank you and to leave enough for the bush to plant more seeds and for other animals to eat and for other people to have. Like, that is a teaching in kinship and reciprocity right there. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's hard to navigate. Like we're saying, it's inappropriate to gather here and to interact with the land in the same way we would at home, just because we don't know all the proper protocols here, nor should we know all the proper protocols here. It's honestly, some things are just none of your business, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely like compartmentalize my relationship to land and any idea of, yeah, what that connection did for me and how it fosters my healing and relationships. So I would just stay in my apartment. I like wouldn't go to nature at all. Because I gathered, like no one told me really, but my cooka, you know, she shaded me if I like ever as a kid grabbed something I should not have grabbed. So I think I just like had really hunkered down into that.
Yeah.
That special cremate fear. Mm-hmm. And I was really unwell when I was here initially, and I didn't go out. Wow, Frederick. I didn't go out to nature and I didn't explore because I had only internalized this idea that if I was in nature then it would be the way I was at home, which is grabbing some shotguns and like going down a dirt road, gathering medicine, like getting berries, going fishing, or you know, just laying there and being held in that, and that I hadn't been taught how to be any other way, and I also hadn't been taught how to contextualize that this was a kinship connection. It was just, yeah, it was this teaching that was like hanging over me without really being outlined to me and how to interact with it as someone who's not living on my territory. So I initially would just be here and, yeah, not have the spaces or the access or knowledge on how to have any kind of coping for my trauma or my mental health. And then I would just stay here and navigate being in a new place until I eventually had a breakdown like every semester of university and I had to fly home, and then I'd go home and be with my family and be out on the land and try to like soak it all up really, really quickly and hold it close to myself and then come back here. And and for me it was finding that balance of actually, yeah, unpacking what that relationship is and what that responsibility is, and recognizing and humbling myself to a relationship to someone else's territory, and finding ways to, yeah, hold my wellness and hold my ancestors and my needs for being connected to land while also only honoring that land and not taking from it or not gathering medicine on it. Mm-hmm. And not feeling, yeah, entitled to having those teachings. And over the years, it's definitely, I do still miss home, obviously. It feels like I have more capacity to be here and be present in a good way when I'm actually honoring those relationships and recognizing that there's kinship ties here as well. They just look different than at home.
Yeah, and I feel like for me, navigating this and also really like coming of age here, because I mean, I moved to Vancouver when I was 18 and I've been here 10 years. In 2 weeks, I'll be here 10 years. And just like, I don't know, those are really formative years where you're growing from your like late teens to your 30s. That's a chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like one thing that's really kind of rooted me in trying to walk carefully, and I'm not saying like I do everything perfectly and I mess up all the time, is thinking about like how we have found kinship, mm-hmm. literal kin, and how I've been able to hold kinship with other prairie folks and hold kinship with my chosen family here, and how it feels good to hold that part of our way of being, but still be able to interact with the land here and not feel like I'm taking. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm holding on just, like, a little bit of this thing I can have from home and still, like, be able to, like, do things here in a good way, mm-hmm. or try my best.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, those relationships are really important. And I don't know. I feel like, yeah, when we became friends, it was the first time that I had seen someone who looked like my family here. Which is, I mean, you literally, yeah, you've seen photos. Sam looks exactly like my family members, because she is one. But, yeah, to, like, have that connection and also to be able to talk to someone who grew up in the Northern Prairies and what that actually means for us, both politically and within our safety and security. Yeah, I just think about, yeah, all of the things that I didn't even realize were a racialized experience of mine. I just, I don't know, was this earnest little cream Métis kid who came here and was like, everyone experienced this, and they did not.
They didn't.
No, they did not. But to have that space to actually have those connections and, the good and the bad that I can talk to you about, like, family trauma, and you're like, ah, yes. I, too, did the exact same thing. And, to have the space to just say, oh, Northern Cree Métis moms, like, that's what they do. And it's a positive.
It's a positive. Sharon, I love that our moms are so similar, yet the exact opposite of each other.
Yeah, they're the same. They just take different approaches.
Yeah, same core, different methodology. So, yeah, we're coming to the end. Say anything you want to add? Anything you want to say about yourself?
Say about myself?
I don't know. How do you... I'm going to hit, like, end record, and then we're just going to go have a cigarette. Like, I don't... Yeah.
I have nothing left to say. Just kidding. I have a lot left to say.
This is mixed messaging.
I know. All right. I'm a Gemini rising.
All right, well, thank you for having this conversation with me. Hopefully we're not canceled at the end.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
This is Gemini Rising, Valley Girl. Thank you, Sam, for having me. It was a really beautiful experience.
Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. All right.
Thanks, Sam. I really appreciated joining the podcast with you. Sorry. Okay, I'll just say thank you. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Lindsay, for talking to me today.
Thank you, Sam. I really appreciated being brought in for the conversation. You honor all of our ancestors. Just kidding. Thanks, Sam.
Just kidding. You honor all of our ancestors, JK.
Can't say thank you. We're talking about reciprocity. I can't say thank you to you.
Thanks.
It just feels so weird. Maybe that's our kinship. We don't. We don't have the niceties.
No.
Yeah, it was a cool experience to record one of our conversations. Thank you for pausing when we needed to. And looking forward to editing this with you. And, yeah, when we're talking about proximity and kinship, it is a tight form of kinship to talk about all of these things and hope the person holds you.
Then just edit it all out. Don't worry. All right. Bye.
Bye.
CFRO 100.5 FM. Bendobo.
Welcome to the seventh and final bubble broadcast. This episode we're going to focus on digestion sounds with a piece by Davide Balula called Interrupting Words with Burp Sounds, Garlic-Fed Brass Players. Davide Balula is an artist with a multi-sensorial practice. He regularly collaborates with chefs, dancers, and musicians on performances and improvisation concerts. His solo exhibitions and performances have been presented internationally, and he lives and works in New York City. Interrupting Words with Burp Sounds, Garlic-Fed Brass Players, has been performed live in several venues, including Art Basel, Miami Beach, and Project 8 in New York. In each performance iteration, horn players consume a garlic concoction. This pungent beverage then spontaneously reemerges as a brassy burp or belch, as interpreted through the instrument. The audience is also consuming the same garlic cocktail as they commingle with the performers. The soundscapes vary in intensity and frequency, as per the architecture of the space, the proximity of the performers to the audience, and the particularities of each body's reaction to the garlic beverage. We are playing a studio recording of the piece recorded at NYU Studios in 2014 with Andrew Nice playing tuba and Elizabeth Phillipson-Viner playing trombone. It's 21 minutes long.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh. You were just listening to Interrupting Words with Burp Sounds, Garlic Fed Brass Players by artist Davide Balula on Bubble Broadcast. Thanks for listening. We've had a great time producing these audio segments over the past 8 weeks. As always, we're really grateful to Bopa Chai and Eric Hood at ArtSpeak for the opportunity to explore some of these sound ideas. Also to Brady Marks for helping us out early on with a technical crash course. And to the Mitchell Gallery and Edmonton Arts Council for supporting our bubble-based Big Rock Candy Mountain project.
My name is Caitlin Purcell, and I am a Dene Irish writer and artist currently based in Calgary, Alberta. I'm originally from Edmonton with parents from Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, and Ottawa, Ontario. Over the last 5 years, I have become connected with Kablusiak in serendipitous ways, and I feel so grateful to now be given this opportunity to create a commissioned piece in response to their ArtSpeak exhibit, Ublak Dikiuak. Metamorphic black rabbits unravel, batons out of soapstone you keep, searching for sediment in my skin. We cried, clung to crispy chicken strips and kissed before bed. I wished I had been more romantic and spent longer placing these lips all over. You and your hands are so small in mine. I flossed, brushed, rinsed, put in my night guard. We kissed. I pulled out the wet crescent to taste, lips laced with beer, and our bodies wandered until I shook. And the phone rang and rang, and it was nearly midnight on a Wednesday. And an hour later, another mouth arrived. More beer swam the air between us, and I could no longer taste the mint. In the winter lives a thousand suns. Wrap caribou and sinew around my head until the snow burns quietly. All my knives are very young. My mother taught me how to make a home. She washed my hair in the kitchen sink and told me that this was how her mom used to do it, but without running water, just a bucket. I wondered if she was scared when the axe fell through her finger. I wonder if scar tissue has a spirit that lives on in me.
The DTES Response Fund supports COVID-19 rapid response efforts for the 15,000 people at risk in Vancouver's downtown East Side. Your financial donation helps cover food, hygiene products, cleaning supplies, transportation, and telecommunications. All donations are being received by the Network of Inner City Community Services Society and will receive a charitable tax receipt. Visit their website at dtesresponse.ca. That's dtesresponse.ca.